All right, Jabal, say good morning. Good morning, good morning. Let us begin. A beautiful daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Mem Dalid Amud Aleph. Although I tried to get to the Mishnah in yesterday afternoon's shir, we're actually just going to pick up on the bottom of Mem Gimel Amud Beis. And we are picking up 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 lines up from the bottom. Our shir this morning is dedicated by our Talmud Torah sponsors of the month of Shvat, Ed and Faith Wolf, in memory of Faith's mother, Nessa Basvelvel, and Bracha Strimber, in memory of her husband, Avi Avram Ben Kalman Eliezer Halevi. And we dedicate, we hope that in the merit of our learning, the Neshamas will have an Aliyah. The family is a Nechama, and we dedicate our learning of the Zechus of Rafur Shlimah for Yoshua Simcha Ben Bluma, in the hope that he, together with Kol Chol Yisrael, will have a complete and enduring Rafua. And both said, with that, let us begin. So we are picking up. Remember again the Mishnah. The Mishnah quoted a Braisa that spoke about the number of different things that a Talmud Chacham should not do. Amongst them, the Gemara says, "Va'al yetzei yichidi ba'layla." Ultimately, again, a Talmud Chacham should not go out alone at night. Why is that? Mishum chashada. Ultimately, again, because he is suspect. In other words, it looks like if somebody goes out alone at night, it looks like that ultimately, again, perhaps he's going for some type of illicit rendezvous. Now, we'll say, now you say to yourself, well, if that's the case, if that's the case, then why don't we say any person shouldn't go out at night? So remember, again, the idea that you see over here from the Gemara is that Chazal are holding the Talmud Chacham to a higher standard of conduct. That the Talmud Chacham has to make sure that he is beyond reproach. That his behaviors ultimately, again, are above any possibility of any type of even perception of wrongdoing. So do people go out at night for non-illicit purposes? Of course they do. But Lamaisa Talmud Chacham must make sure that his behavior is just not subject to any possibility of negative perception. But this is only true if he does not have it. Oh, I forgot one additional sponsor. I'm sorry. I'm not sure if it was a sponsorship for yesterday or for Shabbos. So Dr. Lussman, dedicate. When was the sponsorship for? Was it for Erev Shabbos?
Friday.
Okay, so thank you to Dr. Lussman. Baruch Hashem. It's a lot of advertisements over here in the beginning of the show. Thank you, Dr. Lussman, for dedicating this year. Friday, Shabbos, we're going to give you a bonus, a 3-for-1, because I announced it yesterday also, in honor of a special anniversary, whatever number it is, Mazel Tov, and in gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Thank you very much for the sponsorship. Yeshikach. So we'll say, the Gemara says, when is this true, ultimately, again, that a Talmud Chacham is not permitted to go out? That's only if he doesn't have a set time to learn with his Rebbe. But if, again, he has a shir at night, so again, people know that the reason he's going out is ultimately to learn with his Rebbe. And ultimately, again, he cannot go out. Talmud Chacham can't go out with patched shoes. It is a degradation for a Talmud Chacham to go out with patched shoes. We'll say this is in line, by the way, similarly the Gemara says that Talmud Chacham who walks out with a stain on his clothing is Chayiv Misa. Okay, a bit of hyperbole, but the idea being that the Talmud Chacham is supposed to be the ambassador of Torah, the ambassador of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore even his external appearance has to be pristine. So he can't go out with patched clothing. Yini, is that so? Vaha Rabbi Chiya bar Abba of Nafik, yet Rabbi Chiya bar Abba did go out with patched shoes. Armar Zutra Brei Drav Nachman Bitaloi Agabi Taloi. So the Gemara says, no, it's talking about a patch on top of a patch. So the idea is people patch their shoes all of the time. But the idea is if it's a patch on top of a patch, that's already such a sorry state of disrepair that it'll be inappropriate for a Talmud Chacham to go out like that. Velo Amar Ela Babansa about Begilda Leslanba. Furthermore, this is only if the patch is on the top of the shoe, or is the visible part of the shoe. But if the patch is on the heel, right on the bottom of the shoe, we don't worry about it. Furthermore, furthermore, this is only shoes you wear outside of the house. If he happens to like his slippers and they have multiple patches, he can wear it inside of the house as well. And furthermore, this is only true during the summer. But during the winter, we don't worry about it. So we'll say, it's interesting. Why is it that the winter we don't worry about it? So Rashi says, anyway, during the winter, people's shoes are covered with mud. We'll say, just you see, like, people, everyone, that was normal. You walked around muddy shoes. It's not rich, poor. That's everyone walked around with muddy shoes. So no one really ever saw your shoes during the winter anyway, because it was caked with mud. Next. a Talmid Chacham should not converse with a woman in the marketplace. Amar Rav Chista, va'afilu hi ishto. Rav Chista said this is true even if it's his wife. And Rashi says, afilu hi ishto, she'in hakol makirin ba, v'choshtin also. Because ultimately, again, not everyone knows who the Talmid Chacham's wife is and who it's not. So again, Rabbi said this is all about holding oneself to a higher standard of behavior. That the Talmid Chacham should not, the goal is, no one should be able to say anything. Rabbi said, now you know, of course, by the way, that this is virtually an impossible standard. Because, and we know, when people want to talk, they'll always find what to talk about. Remember, again, no greater example of this than Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Again, remember, what did they say when Moshe Rabbeinu stopped living with his wife as a result of being in direct communication with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? They accused him of being an adulterer. Say, if he's not living with his wife, he must be living with someone else's wife. Right? So you see that when people, it's a general yisod in life, when people want to find something negative, they'll always find something negative, even about a Moshe Rabbeinu. That might be true, but the Talmid Chacham is still obligated to do whatever is within his power to avoid suspicion. So even speaking with a woman in the shuk, Tanya Namiochi, Afilu Ishto, Afilu Hibito, Afilu hi achoso. This idea of a Talmid Chacham not speaking with a woman in the shuk is true even if it's his wife, even if it's his daughter, even if it's sister. Why? Lefi she'in hakol bikin bikrabosav. Because ultimately, again, because not everybody is knowledgeable, not everybody knows who the relations of the Talmid Chacham are. Va'al Yosef v'chabur sha'ami ha'aretz, this is incredible. And he should not go ahead and literally sit down with a group. Literally, haseba means recline. He shouldn't recline with hamaratzim, with ignorant people. Mai taima, dilma asi le'em shuchei basrayhu. Because perhaps the Talmid Chacham will be pulled after the hamaratzim. Rabbi Yosef said, it's such an incredible yisod. What is this saying? Rabbi Yosef said, so be careful who your friends are. A lot of times in life, we think that we can allow ourselves to be exposed to certain things, and those exposures or those influences won't hurt us. I'm strong enough on my own that even if the people who I associate are not doing the right things, that's what they do, but that's not going to influence me, right? I'm strong enough to withstand all of the influences. And the Gemara says, Yisuf, that's a blatantly false statement. That's a delusional statement. The people who you keep company with are the people absolutely who impact you in so many dramatic ways, sometimes even in ways that you don't know. See, even the Talmud Chacham. Well, see, when the Gemara talks about a Talmud Chacham, that's a serious level to have reached. But yet the Gemara says, Talmud Chacham, don't recline. Don't start keeping company with the Amaratzim, because if that's who you keep company with, then at the end of the day, they will pull you into their chabura. Don't think that you could withstand the influences of negative people around you. Of course, Rabbi said, you have to go ahead and have good relationships with every person, but there's a difference between people who you have good relationships with versus people who you recline with. Right? The people you recline with are the people you keep close company with. So just understand, your friends may be good people, but if they're not doing the right things, they will exert a negative influence on you. And no matter how personally strong you think you may be, that impact is always felt. The Gemara says, "Va'al ikarnis achrona lebeis hamedrash." Don't come last to Beis Medrash. I would globalize this. Don't come late to the Beis Medrash, right? Aikani sachrona le Beis Medrash. Why? Mishum dekar le poshea. Because I'll say, what happens if you come last to the Beis Medrash? They're going to call you negligent, right? The poshea. Ve'yishomim aflo yafsiya psiagasa. Don't take large steps. So we'll say this refers to an arrogant stride. So don't take an arrogant stride. Damamar. Say, this is an incredible Gemara, that taking arrogant strides takes away some percentage of your eyesight. The idea being that one who walks in a haughty fashion removes part of his eyesight. Rabbi say, now what does that mean, walking in a haughty fashion? See, Rabbi say, arrogance blinds a person. Right? When a person is arrogant, all they see is their own ideas, their own ego, their own hashkafas, and they're blinded to the realities around them. That's what it means. When you take arrogant steps, it removes some percentage of your eyesight. My takante. So I will say, ultimately, again, so how do you remedy this? Let's say I did take long strides, large strides, and therefore, again, I lost part of my eyesight. So what's the takana? This is incredible. Bikidusha debeshma. Bikidusha. So we'll say, so look at Rashi, last Rashi, the Dafik Dusha, the Beishimshi, Sheshose Kosa Shal Kiddush, b'Shabbos ba'ala, drink the Kiddush wine. So apparently drinking the Kiddush wine restores a level of eyesight. They both say, what's the pshat? What's the pshat? So the pshat is, what's Kiddush on Shabbos? Kiddush on Shabbos is ultimately when you accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the creator. That's the antithesis of Gaiva, right? Gaiva is that I am the center of the universe. Gaiva, there's nothing more important than me. Gaiva, it's my ideas, my hashkafas, my ideologies, my outsides, my insights, my outlooks. That's what's correct. Kiddush on Shabbos is when I accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the Borei, not just as the Borei. I bend my creative knee to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's the one who fashions everything. Kiddush is the ultimate demonstration of anava, of humility. In Kiddush, I humble myself. The 6 days of the week, I think I'm the creator of the world, or at least the creator of my world. Then Shabbos comes along and says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the creator of everything. So he who has been afflicted by Gaiva has manifested itself by taking large strides, and therefore has lost part of his life vision, regains that vision when he humbles himself before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lastly, the Gemara says, "Vayahalich bekom zekufa." Do not walk with literally again like a straight posture. So we'll say this doesn't. Obviously, you can walk with a straight posture. What this refers to really is almost like with someone like with their nose in the air, right? Someone who walks with like an arrogant type of posture. The Gemara says, "Damer maha mahalich bekom zekufa." One who goes in and walks with like an arrogant posture. Afila arba amos. It's as if he's pushing away the feet of the Shekhinah. Bose, the idea is that a person walks a little bit in a humbled posture in this world, recognizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on top of me. But at the end of the day, a person walks with a totally erect posture. A person walks a little bit of an arrogant posture. It's as if they're pushing away the feet of the Shekhinah. The Chsiv, Melo Kala Aretz Kibodo. Beautiful. We'll say top of Mandalit Mishnah. So we'll say now we come to a concept we've alluded to many, many times throughout the last number of Tapim. Now we're going to see it. Heviu lefanam aliyach tchila upasimo. Listen to this. They brought before a person something very salty. And together with the salty item, they also brought bread. So we'll say, so in this case over here, it's clear that a person is eating the bread. Why? To blunt the saltiness of the food item. So what's the halacha? Mevarech al maliach upoter sapas. You go and you make a bracha on the salty item, and that exempts the bread. So we'll say in this type of situation, one would not be obligated to make a hamotzi lechem min haaretz on the bread. Rather, one makes a bracha on the maliach, on the salty item, and the bread is only brought there in order to blunt the saltiness. Upoter sapas shapas tefilo, because in this case the bread is secondary to the salty item. Zeh klal, and this is the rule. Kol shu ikar v'imot tefilo mevarech al ikar. We've seen this rule many, many, many times already throughout just the sixth parak. But here it is. The halacha is that whenever you have two food items, one is an ikar, one is a tafel, one is primary, one is secondary, you make a bracha on the primary item and it exempts the secondary item. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara just wonders, is such a case, is such a metzias really possible where you have something that is more primary to bread, or a situation where you're only eating bread to blunt the taste of something else? To which the Gemara says, "Amar Rava Chabrei Ravivi," or yes, "Amar Ravashi, but ochle peros ginosar shan." Rabbis, listen to this. The case is where a person eats the fruit of ginosar. Rashi says over here, "Peros ginosar, peros eretz yam kineret, chashuvim min hapas." So Rabbis say, if you ever go ahead and you drive, and if you're driving there, so you take the Jordan Valley Road, you pass a moshav that's called Moshav Ginosar. I don't know if it's the same Ginosar as there, but again, it's right by the Kinneret. So Ginosar was known to produce the most sweetest and the sweetest and most succulent fruit. So the Gemara gives, you'll see why in just a moment. So the Gemara says, Gemara tells a story. Amar Abba Rachana. Listen to this. Ki avazlina baseid Rabbi Yochanan. When we, the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan, would follow after him, Lamecha Periskosis. So Rabbi Yochanan was going to see, loved the fruit of Ginosar. So Rabbi Barachana says that when we, the Talmidim, would follow after our Rebbe to bring him Peros Ginosar, so ki avinan bemea menaktinalu kolchad v'chad asara asara. When there were 100 students, each student would take 10 fruit. When we were only 10 students, every student took 100 fruits. And every one of the 100 fruits of Ginosar, right? And again, they were such large fruits that 100 fruits would be held in a basket that held 3 saw. large. Va'achilahu, and Rabbi Yochanan would go ahead and eat all of the fruit. Mostly he would eat 1,000 peros kinosar. O mishtaba, the low time ziyuna, and he would swear, it's as if I've eaten nothing. Ziyuna sakadait, as if he ate nothing. 1,000 fruit. Obviously, there's a bit of hyperbole over here. He's not eating 1,000 fruit. The idea is being, is he's eating a lot of fruit, and he would swear, it's like I ate nothing. So they ate nothing. Ela'ima mizona. Rather, what he said is like this. It's as if I eat nothing and then I'm not full. I'm not full. I eat all of this fruit, and it's as if I'm not full. Rabbi Avo, ach, is supposed to say, the idea being, when something is so sweet, so apparently it doesn't sate, it doesn't satisfy. Instead, what it does is it just increases hunger. So Rabbi Yochanan would eat all of this fruit, and after eating all of this fruit, he would swear, I'm still hungry. Rabbi Avo, listen to this. Achal adda havusarik le dudva meafusye. Rabbi Avo would go ahead and eat the fruit, literally again, until his skin became so soft, and almost like so slick from the fruit that a fly would slip off his forehead. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, Hava Achli, Adinasr Mazayu. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi would eat it. He would eat the fruit of Ginosra until the hair fell out. So I'll say, apparently what this means is, again, same idea. This is what happened to me, by the way. Again. So I'll say, so the peros ginosar, so apparently, again, because they're so sweet, and I guess because like the skin becomes so oily from it, the pores opened up and their hair fell out. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Hava Achil Ad Demarid. Rabbi Shimon Lakish ate it. Demarid literally means, Rashi says, Daito Mitarefes. Literally, he lost his mind. He became like delirious with the sweetness. Rabbi Yochanan said to the house of the Nasi, Vahav Mishadjale Rabbi Huda Nisiya Balushi, Abasei Umaisei Lebeisei. And ultimately, again, Rabbi Shimon Lakish ate so much fruit that he became like incapacitated. They had to send soldiers or attendance from the house of Rabbi Huda Nasi to take him home. Shabbos says, the Gemara is just giving an example over here. Now, why are they bringing this up? Because apparently the fruits of Ginosa were so sweet that you could not eat them by themselves. So what would people do? They would eat a piece of bread together with the peros ginosar in order to go ahead and blunt the sweetness. So the Gemara is bringing this as an example because the Gemara is bothered by, is there such a case, is there such a situation where you would go ahead and have to eat bread to blunt the taste of something else? To which the Gemara says, yes, peros ginosar was so sweet that you could not eat them alone. You would have to eat them with something else to blunt the sweetness. It was just as an aside. And therefore, again, the halacha would be that technically speaking, if you're not eating bread, even though, remember again, if there's one rule that we've seen throughout our journey in the sixth parak of brachas, is that bread is king. Bread is always king, with one exception, where it's clear that the bread is only being consumed to blunt the taste of something else. The item which you're blunting is the ikker. The bread is the tafel. You make the bracha on the item and do not make the bracha on the bread. Now, I will tell you, we do not paskin this way. Right? Really, the Mishnah Berurah says that me'ikar adin, even if this is true, like the Mishnah Berurah's case is, you know, from the Mishnah Berurah's perspective, the case of maliach, of a very salty piece of fish, is a very common case. So again, he says, our common day practice is once you're eating bread, you're always making the hamotzi, even if it's clear the only reason the bread is being consumed is to blunt the taste. But nevertheless, if you're a purist, the halacha really is like this, that halacha lamaisa, if the bread is only being consumed to blunt the sweetness or the saltiness, the bread is the tafel, the other item is the ikar. But so just say as an aside, we'll see this later on, but not in this masakta, I think it's an apple. I don't remember which masakta it's in. But why is it that the fruit of ginosa was so sweet? So the Gemara discusses that there are multiple entrance ways to Gan Eden in this world. And one of the entryways to Gan Eden is by Ginosar. So ultimately, again, because the entranceway is there, the Shefa, right, the flow of Kiddusha of Gan Eden flows into Ginosar, and it manifests itself ultimately in the sweetness of the fruit. Such a beautiful idea. Kiyos, I will say, so now, by the way, that we started speaking about the Peros of Ginosar, the Gemara is going to use this as an opportunity, ultimately, to speak about the incredible vitality of Eretz Yisrael. So Kiyos, Rav Dimi Amar, and Dimi came along and said as follows, Ir achas haisol yanai hamelech bahar hamelech. So King Yanai had a particular city in Har HaMelech. So I'll say, Har HaMelech HaMelech is identified by the Marsha as being in the area that we call the Shomron. So the Shahayu Motziyim Imenu Shishim Rivo Safle Taris Lekotet Seitein. And mostly, now watch this. So in this area in HaMelech, King Yana had a city, and in this city, what they would do is they would bring out 600,000 bowls of sliced tuna to those who went ahead and were harvesting the figs. So we'll say, what does this mean? They had so many people harvesting figs that they had to feed them 600,000 bowls of sliced tuna. That's so. The idea is it's not a chap in the tuna, right? It's a chap in the figs, right? That's how many workers they had harvesting figs in this one area. That it was 600,000 bowls. They both said, by the way, whenever you see the number 600,000, also it's usually a bit of hyperbole, because 600,000 is always that number again for Yotzei Mitzrayim, always represents a lot. The idea being, they had such an incredible number of workers who are harvesting figs in this area to show you the fig production that was taking place. So the Gemara says, Me'erev Shabbos, Le'erev Shabbos. So I will say this again, this was the amount of sliced tuna that they served over the course of 1 week. 600,000 bowls of sliced tuna to feed the workers who are harvesting the figs. Similarly, again, Rabin says that there was one tree that Yanai had in Har HaMelech. Remember, Har HaMelech is this region. Shahayu moridim imenu arboim sa'a gozlos mishalosh brechos. One tree produced 40 sa'a of young pigeons from three different groups in every month, b'chodesh. And again, so one tree producing an incredible amount of pigeons per month. Kiyosra Yitzchak Amar Ir Achas Chaysa B'Eretz Yisrael, the Gufnis Shema. There was a city in Eretz Yisrael that was named Gufnis Shahayu Ba Shmonim. So it's actually very beautiful. So this is switching gears a little bit. Well, you know, once you start talking about the beauty of Eretz Yisrael, so things kind of flow one into the other. So first we started speaking about the vitality of the land, right? The vitality of the land, ultimately, again, in figs. The vitality of the land. Well, first, the vitality of the land in Peros Ginosar. Then vitality of the land with fig production. Then vitality of the land with pigeon production. Now the Gemara says something very beautiful. There was a land in Eretz Yisrael. There was a city in Eretz Yisrael, excuse me. And the name of the city was Gufnis. So that goes to Tzin and changes this to Gufnin. Okay, so that's Gufnin. Shehayuba Shmonim Zugos Achim Kohanim. There are 80 pairs of Kohanic brothers. 80 pairs of Kohanic brothers. Nisuim Shmonim Zugos Achayos Kohanos, who married 80 pairs of Kohanic sisters. So I will say, what's the chap of this? They were so careful to preserve Kohanic Yichus, that Kohanim would only marry Kohanos. Right? So there was this city in Eretz Yisrael where the Kohanim were so careful to preserve their Yichus that Kohanim would only marry girls from Kohanic families as well. And they looked everywhere. They could not find another city that had this. They could not find this practice, this genealogical purity anywhere else, from Eretz Yisrael to Babylonia. Barmi Banse Drat Chista, Davinisim Lorai Bar Chamo Lomar Ukva. He'll say the closest they came to it is that the daughters of Rav Chista, two daughters married two brothers, right? Two sisters married two brothers. The daughters of Rav Chista married Rami Bar Chamo and Mar Ukva Bar Chamo. Va'af agav de'inhi havi kahanto inhu lo havi kohanin. Even though the girls were daughters of Kohanim, the men who they married were not Kohanim. Okay, beautiful. So we'll say, so again, the Gemara is just giving another example just of the incredible abundance of Eretz Yisrael and then the genealogical purity which could only be found in Eretz Yisrael. Amar Rav, kol su d'shem b'melach, inu suda. We'll say, it's actually a quite idea. Rav says, any meal that doesn't have salt is not a meal. So we'll say, so just to understand, just on a very basic level, so again, Rav is saying that, remember, salt was an incredibly important fixture in their meal. Because remember, again, like we saw, you're supposed to have salt for the bread, because generally it appears that bread was blander, right? So the idea was that halacha l'maaseh, you made the piece of bread a bit more palatable by adding salt. So Rav says, salt is a necessary condiment for any meal, and any meal that you don't have bread in, ultimately, again, is a deficient meal. Amar Rabbi Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol sud she'im basrif, ein esud. This was interesting. Rabbi Yochanan says, any meal that doesn't have soup, right? Any meal that doesn't have soup is not a meal. So we'll say bepashtos, what they're referring to ultimately, again, is what makes a meal chashiv, right? What makes a meal? What is it that makes a meal chashiv? Is it ultimately, again, is it ultimately the salt, or is it the soup? So we'll say, so this is something interesting. So it could very well be that this machlokis is also not just a machlokis about meal, but also an interesting hashkafas achayim. That if you look at the su'udah, the meal, not just as a culinary experience, but the meal as a metaphor for life. Shabbos said, so what makes life meaningful? So the first opinion says, it's salt. But say, what is salt? What is salt? Salt adds flavor. You see, a person could go through life, and you could do all the right behaviors, but there's no flavor. There's no flavor. My Yiddishkeit is bland. My avodas Hashem is bland. I daven every day, but what a bland tefillah, right? I do mitzvahs every day, but what bland mitzvahs. There's no flavor. The food is there. I have all the food groups, right? I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, but there's no salt. There's no melach. And a person could live an entire lifetime being behaviorally pious, but flavor deficient. There's no flavor in my life. There's no flavor in my avodas Hashem. So the first opinion says, what makes life life? What makes your avodas Hashem real? It's the melach. You gotta have flavor. You gotta have hislavos. You have to have passion. You have to have excitement. You have to have a brent. You have to have something that brings energy to your Yiddishkeit. Second opinion says, we'll say, what gives meaning to life? What gives meaning to the suda? Soup. We'll say, what's soup? What's soup? Soup is an appetizer. You see, there are two different ways you could have a meal. You could jump right into the main, or you could have an appetizer. What does the appetizer do? It prepares you. If you want to have meaningful avodas Hashem, meaningful avodas Hashem requires an appetizer. It requires hachana. It requires preparation. If you want to have meaning in your Yiddishkeit, you can't just jump into a mitzvah, but you have to prepare for it. Like we saw, Chasidim HaRishonim, you want to have meaning in your Yiddishkeit, it requires preparation. There's an energy that goes in. A lot of times, the reason why we don't find fulfillment in our avodas Hashem is because we're not properly or adequately prepared to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's true in so many areas. Sometimes the preparation is we don't really understand what it is that we're doing. We don't have a full appreciation. Or sometimes it's just that we roll in and we do it and there's not the proper achana. So Rabbi says, so the shayla is, which gives meaning to the suda of life? Is it the flavor, the extra energy and passion? Or is it the soup? Is it the hachana? So I think halacha lemaisa, you have to have salt. And you have to have soup, right? We paskin like both. You have to have flavor. You have to have a zrizos, an excitement for a Yiddishkeit, infuse a flavor, but you also have to have the achana. Beautiful. Says the Mishnah. We'll say next. A person eats grapes and figs, virimonim, more pomegranates. So mevarich acharim shalosh brachas. So this is actually quite amazing. Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel says, if you eat from the Shiva Saminim, right? So remember again, both say this is not obvious. You don't have to eat all of these items. You're eating one of these items. You're eating something from the Shiva Saminim, grapes, figs, or pomegranates. Rabbi Gamliel Paskins, you have to bench afterwards. You must bench after Shiva Saminim. We'll see why he says that. Say no, bracha achas mein shalosh. No, all you need is what we call a bracha achas mein shalosh, which, you know, an ala michi or ala gefen, which we'll see in the Gemara. Rabbi Kiva Omer, afilu achal shalak v'umizonu, mevarech alav gimel brachas. This is incredible. Both Rabbi Kiva comes along. So both say, so first machlokis in the Mishnah is, what are you obligated to do after Shiva Saminim? Rabbi Gamliel says you're obligated to bench. Rabbi, the Chachamim say bracha achas mein shalosh. Comes on Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva advances the most expansive shita we have by benching. Rabbi Akiva says, when do you bench? When do you bench? After you eat a meal and you're full. That's it. It actually doesn't matter what it is that you're eating. So he says, for example, even if you're just eating a cooked vegetable, and that's your su'uda, after you finish that, you have to bench. If a person drinks water because he's thirsty, he makes a bracha of shakol. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, borei nefashos rabos vechesron. Rabbi Tarfon says, no, you make a brain nefashos. So we'll see exactly what they're arguing about in the Gemara. Says the Gemara, my time with Rabbi Gamliel. What's Rabbi Gamliel's lachin? Rabbi says, so why does Rabbi Gamliel say that halacha lemaisa, you bench after you eat figs, grapes, or a pomegranate, after you eat even the fruit of Shiva Saminim, Tichsiv, Eretz Chita Usora, because the Torah discusses the Sheva Saminim, Uksiv Eretz Asher Lo Mil Meskinos Tocho Balechem, Uksiv Yachalta V'Savato V'Rachtas Hashem Elokecho. So I will say in Rabbi Gamliel's model, very simple, Sheva Saminim is juxtaposed to benching. So you see from here that what? That Halacha L'Maisa, well, I should say, Sheva Saminim is juxtaposed to bread. Bread is juxtaposed to Birkas Hamazon. So if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. And I say, therefore, again, Halacha L'Maisa, therefore, again, after going ahead and partaking of Sheva Saminim, you go ahead and you bench. Juxtaposition. The Rabbanon say, no. Eretz Hifseka Inyan. No. The intervening pasuk will say, so in other words, there's a pasuk of Sheva Saminim, there's a pasuk about bread, and there's a pasuk about Birkas Hamazon. So Rabbi Gamliel sees all three of those linked. The Chacham say, they're not linked. The bracha of bread, the Eretz of the bread pasuk, serves to go ahead and break the link between Sheva Saminim and Birkas Hamazon. To tell you that bread gets Birkas Hamazon, but Sheva Saminim do not. I have Rabbi Gamliel Nami, Eretz Hifseka Inyan. I have Rabbi Gamliel. What do you do about the Eretz? Right? We'll say that's the Eretz Asher Lo B'Meskinos Tocho Balechem. That pasuk interrupts between the bracha of Sheva Saminim and benching. Rabbi Gamliel says, you're right, that comes from interrupt to tell you that if you chew on wheat, you don't require Birkas Hamazon for that. I'm Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi, I'm Rabbi Chanino. So therefore, this is the machlokes. So machlokes, Rabbi Gamliel understands that those three psukim, Sheva Saminim, Eretz Asher Lo B'Meskinos Tocha Balechem, V'Yachalta V'Savato V'Rachta, is all one continuum. And teaches you that halacha lemaisa, you bench ultimately again on Sheva Saminim. Chacham say no. The pasuk of Eretz Asher Lo B'Meskinos Tocha Balechem interrupts the flow to teach you that on bread you bench, but on Sheva Saminim you do not. Of course, you know halacha lemaisa we pass like the Chachamim that we do not bench on Sheva Saminim. So watch this. So the Gemara says, I'm Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi, I'm Rabbi Chanino. Kol shu mechamesh esaminin betchilu mevarech ala borei minei mezonos ulebasof bracha achas min shalosh. Anything that is made from grain, any of the five grains, right? Wheat, barley, spelt, oats, rye. Anything that comes from the five grains, remember we dealt with rice earlier on. Anything that comes from the five grains, you make a mezonos before you eat it, and what we call a bracha achas mein shalosh. We'll say bracha achas mein shalosh is a one bracha that essentially goes ahead and brings together the three first paragraphs of benching. That's bracha achas, one blessing that combines the elements of the three representing the first three brachos of Birkas Hamazon, of benching. What we call for these purposes over here, an ala michyo. Amar Rabba Bar Mari, Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi, kol shu mishiva saminin, betchil mevarech borei pri ha'etz, ulevasov bracha achas mein shalosh. Similarly again, anything that's from the Sheva Saminim. Now this is of course referring to the non-grain parts of the Sheva Saminim. You make a brei pri ha'etz before you eat it, and a bracha achas mein shalosh, what we call an ala eitz, after you eat it. What is this bracha achas? What's the text of this bracha achas mein shalosh? Amalei, so he said to him, aperi de'etz, if you're making this bracha achrona on fruits that come from the tree, so we'll say from Sheva Saminim, so for grapes, for dates, for figs, for pomegranates, here's what you're going to say. Ala eitz v'al periyaitz. Al tnuva sasoda, so on the tree, on the fruit that come from the tree, on the produce from the field. Al eretz chamda tova urechava, on the beautiful, precious, and expansive land. Shinchadol alosim, that you have given to our ancestors, to our forefathers. Lechomer piyav isbal mituva, to eat of its fruit, to become sated from its goodness. Rachim Hashem Elokeinu al Yisrael Amecha, have rachmanis on Jewish, on Yisrael, your nation, v'Yushalayim Yirecha, on Yushalayim, your city, v'Al Mikdashecha, and on your base Hamikdash, v'Al Mizbechecha, and on your altar, v'Sivna Yerushalayim Irkat Shechem Heirah B'Yameinu, rebuild Yerushalayim, your holy city, speedily in our days, v'Ha'alinu L'Socha, bring us into it, v'Samchinu Ba, and allow us to rejoice inside of it. Again, the Hagos, as you know, change, adds on to this girsa. He says, "Besamchinu bevinyana ki ato Hashem tov." So I'll say, so ultimately it changes it a little bit. Ki ato tov umeitiv lakol. We'll say, so by the way, this here, you have it, here's Aleit. So we'll say, isn't it strikingly amazing? Strikingly amazing that we have been saying the same bracha for 2,000 years with slight modifications. But again, those modifications, I just want to point out, there are different versions of the Gemara. So the other alternate versions of the Gemara almost are mirror images of the Ala Eitz that we say to this today. The same bracha for 2,000 years. The same bracha for 2,000 years. It's incredible. Nothing stays the same for 2,000 years. Yet our brachos have stayed the same. The nitzchius of Klal Yisrael. It's just overwhelming. So the Gemara says, this is Kiyato Tovmito. Fine. Look, Chamesha Saminin. What do you say for, what's the bracha? What's the bracha Achas Min Shalosh for grain-based items? Ala Michyo, V'ala Kalkola, V'al Tinu V'asasada, V'chosim. So we'll say, so pretty much it's the same text of the bracha. Just the intro is different. Instead of saying Ala Eitz, V'al Priya Eitz, we say Ala Michyo, V'ala Kalkola, V'al Tinu V'asasada, V'chosim. Ala Aretz V'ala Michya. And we end off the bracha, Baruch Ato Hashem, Ala Aretz V'ala Michya. Again, there are different versions of that suffix, Ala Aretz V'ala Michya, Ala Michya V'ala Kalkala. But again, this is the essence of the bracha. So the Gemara says, Michtam B'may Chasim. So interestingly enough, now I know that what you end off for Ala Michya, how do you, interestingly, we'll say, if you notice, by the way, when the Gemara spoke about the bracha of Ala Eitz, it didn't what? It didn't give us the concluding bracha. Right, it gave me the paragraph, but it didn't give me the concluding bracha for Ala Eitz. So what's the concluding bracha for Ala Eitz? Ki Yasser Avdimi Amarav. So let's listen to this. You're going to go in a little bit of attention. We'll see why we're doing it. So Ki Yasser Avdimi, Amarav. Chasem Barosh Chodesh, Baruch Mekadish Yisrav Rashei Chadoshim. So we'll say, interestingly enough, that Rav, when he would finish off Shmoneh Esrei and Rosh Chodesh, he would end off the brach, with the bracha of Mekadish Yisrael B'Rashei Chadoshim. Rav said, now what's the novelty in the suffix of that bracha? Generally, we assume that brachos should only have one thematic suffix, right? You should end off with one theme. We don't bring in multiple themes. Yet we see that Rav on Rosh Chodesh included Mekadish Yisrael B'Rashei Chadoshim. Why? Because it's not really two themes. Because the one who sanctifies Klal Yisrael, again in this context, Klal Yisrael are the ones who solidify the calendar, and as a result of the Kiddush of Klal Yisrael is able to mekadesh the months. Hachamai, Shabbos says, so you see from here that you could have two elements in the suffix of a bracha, as long as what? The two elements are related. So Rav Chista Amar, Ala Oretz V'Al Perosel. So Rav Chista said the way you should end the bracha of Ala Eitz, right? The bracha Achas Mi'en Shalosh is on the land and on its fruit. And Rabbo said that's not two suffixes, right? Because remember again, the fruit come from the land. So you should say Baruch Ato Hashem, Ala Oretz V'Al Perosel. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Ala Oretz V'Al Peros. Rabbi Yochanan says on the land and on the fruit. Right, so we'll say, you hear the difference? Rav Chista was saying, on the land and on its fruit. Rabbi Yochanan was saying, on the land and on fruit. Amram Amram, this is not a machlokes. Halon v'haluhu. Rav Chista is going to sound a bit strange. Rabbi Yochanan is saying, Ala Aretz V'ala Peros is the bracha they make in Eretz Yisrael. And in Bavel, they make the bracha of Ala Aretz V'ala Peros Sel. Maskev l'ranach ha-ba'yisuk, does that make sense? In hu achli v'anam v'archinon. Remember again, we make an Ala Eitz for the Shiva Saminim. So in Bavel, we're going to say Ala Aretz V'al Peroseho on the land and on its fruit. And in Eretz Yisrael, they're going to say Ala Aretz V'al Peros. So in other words, literally again, Inu Achli V'anam Avarachinon. So in Eretz Yisrael, they're going to eat the Shiva Saminim. And in Bavel, we're going to bless the land for producing the fruit. Ela Eifoch. Rather flip it. Rav Chista Amar Ala Aretz V'al Peros. Rav Chista lived in Bavel. He said in Bavel, outside of Eretz Yisrael, this concluding bracha of the bracha Achas Mein Shalosh is Al Ha'aretz V'Al HaPeros, on the land and on fruit. And in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Yochanan of the Eretz Yisrael says Al Ha'aretz V'Al HaPeros Seha. And Rabbi say this is indeed is how we paskin, right? Ultimately, again, in Eretz Yisrael, ultimately the suffix for the bracha, bracha Achas Mein Shalosh, is Al Ha'aretz V'Al HaPeros Seha, because the land itself is producing the very Shiva Saminim. In Chutz La'aretz, we say the bracha of Al Ha'aretz V'Al HaPeros. I'm thanking Hashem for the species which are indigenous to Eretz Yisrael, recognizing, however, that I am not eating Eretz Yisrael produce outside of Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Says the Gemara, Amud Beis, we'll say. Alright, talk about Rav Yishon Rabbeinu. Ala Be'a Va'al Minei Kufra. So we'll say some really fascinating Gemaras here. So listen to this. What about, right, Ala Be'a Va'al Kufra? Ultimately, again, what about on eggs and on meat? What about on Exit Ami? So I say, if you just take a look, actually, all right, so good. That's so ultimately, just so you understand, the way the Gemara ends off with that last piece is logically, intuitively, if you're in Eretz Yisrael, you're going to say, Ala Aretz V'al Peroseha. That's possessive. I'm going to thank Hashem for the land and for its fruit, because I'm eating the fruit that came from the land of Eretz Yisrael. Chutz La'aretz, I'm going to be thanking Hashem for the Shivas Aminim. But ultimately, again, I can't say Ala Aretz V'al Peroseha. Why? Because the Aretz is a reference to Eretz Yisrael. The fruit that I'm eating outside of Eretz Yisrael is not Eretz Yisrael Dika fruit. So I'll say Ala Aretz V'al Peros. Good. I'm sorry? Meaning if you're eating Eretz Yisrael produce in Chutz La'aretz, I think we still say Ala Aretz V'al Peros. I think. Amra Yisrael Barav Dim Shuram Benu. Ala Be'val Amin Kufra. But what about eggs and meat? Eggs and meat. So betchilam avar shakol ulubasol parin the fashos. So ultimately, again, in the beginning you make shakol, and at the end you're going to make parin the fashos. Parin the fashos rabos. Val yarka lo. Listen to this. So say, but on vegetables, no. Rashi says tzarich levaruchi acharel. So interestingly enough, on eggs and meat, you'll make a shakol first and parin the fashos afterwards. Parin the fashos afterwards. On vegetables, you make a bracha rishona, but no bracha achrona. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar Afilu Yarka. Rabbi Yitzchak says, no, on vegetables, you'll also make a brain of fashos after you eat it. Ava mayalo. But lamaisa on water, you will not make a bracha achrona. Rav Papa Amar Afilu Maya. Rav Papa says, even water, you make a bracha achrona. Marzucha Avik Rabbi Yitzchak Baradimi. Mazucha Paskin, like Rabbi Yitzchak Baradimi, Rabbi Sini Barashi, Ovid Krabi Yitzchak, and Rabbi Sini Barashi ultimately again passed like Rabbi Yitzchak. And how do you remember who held what? Visimana Chad Ketrei, right? The one with one name held like the one with two names, Utrei Kechad, and the one with two names held like the one with one name. Amar Rashi, Ana, Zimna Dechi Madkarna Avidna Kakulu. Rabbi Yitzchak says, whenever I remember, I Paskin like all of them. So we'll say Paskin like all of them means, then I make a shahakol before I eat these items, and I make a brain of fashos after these items. Now, of course, the vegetable, well, so we spoke about cooked vegetables already, when you make a dama versus when you make a shahakol, right? We spoke about that, right? If the vegetable is normally eaten cooked, you can make a dama. If it's not normally eaten cooked, then you would make a shahakol. We had that last week. So Rashi is saying, whenever I remember, Rabbi say focusing now on the bracha achrona, eggs, meat and vegetables would all be items that you would say a berein the fashos on afterwards. So Ashi says, whenever I remember, I make sure to make a berein the fashos after all of these items. And Rabbi say, that is indeed how we paskin. Halacha lemaisa, these items, meat and eggs, certainly get a shakel and a berein the fashos. Vegetables, cooked vegetables, maybe hadama, maybe shakel, depending on the vegetable, but we'll get the berein the fashos afterwards as well. Tnan. Anything that requires a bracha achrona requires a bracha rishona. V'yesh sheta'un bracha lefonav. There are certain items which require a bracha rishona. V'ein ta'un bracha achrona, but do not require a bracha achrona. And we'll say, what would be something that requires a bracha rishona but doesn't require a bracha achrona? According to vegetables, right? Vegetables will get a bracha rishona, but don't get a bracha achrona. Rabbi Yitzchak, lafuke maya. Rabbi Yitzchak will say, refers to water. Water gets a bracha rishona, but not a bracha achrona. El Rav Papa, lafuke maya. But according to Rav Papa, ultimately, again, what is an item that gets a bracha rishona, but doesn't get a bracha achrona? Lafuke mitzvahs. It's incredible. Let's say mitzvahs. You make a bracha on a mitzvah before you perform it, but you don't make a bracha on a mitzvah after the performance. And I both say, now this is incredible. Ulibnei ma'arava. What about the Jews of Eretz Yisrael? De basar de mesalki tfilaihu mevarchi. They both say, this is wild. The Jews of Eretz Yisrael, who wore tefillin all day, after they took off their tefillin, they would make a bracha. Mevarchi asher kidusham esasav tzivanu lishmar chukov. They would make a bracha when they took off their tefillin, thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the opportunity to keep his statues. So there's a beautiful Tosfos. It's Sunday, so you have time today. There's a beautiful Tosfos that actually talks about this dynamic. ultimately, again, why we don't make a bracha after we take off tefillin. Very simply, it's because we don't wear tefillin the whole day. We only actually wear tefillin for very small amounts of intervals. But those who wore tefillin for the entire prescribed time, when they would take it off, would actually make a bracha of Asher Kiddushan Mesasav Bitzvan Lishmar Chukov. So according to this opinion, there are times when you even make a bracha after you perform a mitzvah. So Lafuke Mai, what would it come to exclude? Lafuke Rechani, scent. So we'll say scent, even when you make a bracha on scent, you only make a bracha before you smell the scent, but ultimately, again, not afterwards. Amarav, Kol Shu Ki Beitza, Beitza Tova Mimeno. We'll say, now, this is an interesting, this is a food discussion now. Any food item that is the size of an egg, an egg is better for you. Or as we'll say, now, this is not Hilchos Brachos. This is now food quality discussion. Any food item that is the size of an egg is better quality, right? An egg gives you more than any other food item the size of an egg. Kiyas Rabin Amar Tava Biasa Migulgalta Mishisa Kaisi Sulta. So Rabin said, Biasa Migulgalta. Rashi says Migulgalta. Rashi says Tsluya Lacha Varaka Shasarfanosa. A lightly roasted egg is better than even shisa kaisi, shisa kaisi sulta means 6 measures of fine flour. So fine flour is very high quality. A lightly roasted egg is even better than 6 kaisi of fine flour. Kiasra Abdimi Amar, Tava Biasa Migulgalta Mishisa. Matvi Mituyasa Mearba. So what's that? Mituyasa, Rashi says over here, Tsluya Kasha. If it's not lightly roasted, but fully roasted, it's better than 4 measures of fine flour. Umivushalta kolshu, but if an egg is boiled, right, totally cooked, so the Gemara says, Umivushalta kolshu, kebeitza, Umivushalta kolshu kebeitza, beitza tovi amena labarmi misra. We'll say if you have a fully cooked egg, like it's like a hard-boiled egg, is better than anything that's of the same measure, with the exception of meat, right? Meat is always better than an egg. Rabbi Kiva Omer, good. So we'll say, remember, these were also, the Gemara is talking about over here, just said, not brachos, the Gemara is speaking about the health benefits of these particular foods. So apparently a lightly roasted egg, a fully boiled egg, good. Rabbi Kiva Omer Achol Shalak. So we'll say, remember again, Rabbi Akiva said, very expansive definition of Birkas HaMazon. Rabbi Kiva said, any food that you eat as your primary meal, even if it's a cooked vegetable, if it satisfies you, you recite benching on that. So the Gemara says, "Umi ika miti davashalak mazoni." Is there any cooked vegetable that could satisfy a person like mazonos, like food, like a real meal? Amar Rabashi beklak shal karav shano. Yes, actually, again, the stalk of cabbage. Apparently, cabbage stalks are very filling. So if you eat the cabbage stalk, it could be just as filling as a meal. That's what Rabbi Akiva was saying. If you eat the cabbage stalk as your meal, then halacha lemaisa, you bench afterwards. So obviously we don't paskin that way. Then I'm going to say the Gemara is going to speak about the health benefits of some foods. An incredible Gemara. Turn on banon. Tchol, spleen. Eating the spleen of an animal. It's good for the teeth, but bad for the kishkas. It's bad for your kishkas. Creation, leeks. It's bad for the teeth, but ultimately good for the kishkas, good for the intestines. Kol yerek chai morik. Eating any raw vegetables takes away, morik literally means makes you pale, takes away from your facial countenance. The kol katan maktin. And I will say if you eat any item that is underdeveloped, it stunts your growth. The chol nefesh, we're going to expand on each of these items. The chol nefesh, meshev es hanefesh. If you eat any living thing, it restores vitality, restores life. I will say, now it doesn't literally mean you're eating it while it's alive. What it means, if you look at Rashi says, chol nefesh, davar chai haneach al shalim, kigon dogim ketanim shegadlu kol tzachan. If you eat any item that is consumed whole, right, so for example, small fish like sardines, they ate whole. So any item consumed whole in its full form, ultimately, and that's called make called nefesh, restores vitality. The chol karov la nefesh, meshev es hanefesh. So we'll see what this means. Any part of the animal that you eat that is closest to the life force of the animal, ultimately, again, restores life as well. We'll see what this means. Krov la mazun. Right, cabbage is good for sustaining for mazun. Utradin l'refuah. Beets are good for medicinal purposes. Oilo lebayis, but woe to the home, this refers to the body, shalefes overes besocho. Woe to the body that ingests turnips. Turnips apparently were bad. So said, let's go through all of this. Omar, tachol yafal ishlaim v'kashlam ne'ayim. So apparently consuming a spleen is good for your teeth, but bad for the kishkas. So we'll say, see, here's the problem. So again, if it's good for my teeth, but bad for the kishkas, so how do I consume it in a way that I get the dental benefit without going ahead and getting the intestinal detriment? So my takante, yalasi v'nishaji, very simple. Chew on spleen and spit it out, right? So chew on it. If you chew on it, therefore what? You get the dental benefit, right? You get the teeth benefit. But lamais again, you don't have to worry about the intestinal detriment. Creation leaks kasha lishinayim v'yaflim me'ayim. So it's bad for the teeth, but it's good for the kishka. So how do you ingest it? My takante lishkalinu v'lavinu. Cook it until essentially till it liquefies, and then just drink it down without chewing it. Kol yerek chay morik, ingesting any raw vegetable causes a person to pale. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, b'suda rishona shel achar hakaza. This refers if you eat raw vegetables for your first meal after bloodletting. So apparently, again, it's very detrimental to eat raw vegetables after bloodletting. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, this is interesting. Kol ochal yerek kodem arba shos, asur l'saper himenu. Well, say if someone eats vegetables before the first 4 hours of the day, you shouldn't speak with such a person. Why not? Listen to this. My taima mishum recha, because of intense bad breath. So the idea is that before the first 4 hours in the day, a person might not have eaten. So if you haven't eaten yet, so I mean, bad breath is always difficult if you're on the receiving end of that. But apparently, it's even more difficult if halacha lemaisa, you haven't eaten anything yet. So if someone eats vegetables before the fourth hour of the day, they're bad breath. But say, remember again, when you see these gemaras, so even though some of these things might sound stranger but alien to us, they're functions of the type of diet and lifestyle they had. Rabbi said, right? This is not like Chazal darshaning a pasuk. This is Chazal telling you about what happens if you go and eat. So again, reflective of the way they ate, reflective of their diets. Rabbi Yitzchak, Aser li adam sheyochal yerek chay kodem arba shos. Rabbi Yitzchak says, really, a person should not go ahead and eat raw vegetables in the first 4 hours of the day. It's detrimental to one's constitution. Listen to this. Amir Marzut Rabashi, Hava Yosvi, we're all sitting together. Yasi kamayo yerek chay kodem arba shos. So they were sitting together before 4 hours into the day, and they brought before them raw vegetables. Amir Ravashi achal. So Amir Ravashi ate it. Marzutra lo achal. Marzutra wouldn't eat it. Amrulei my dietek. So he said to Marzutra, "Nu, who do you hold? Like Dam Rabbi Yitzchak kala ochel yarek kodem arba shos asal sabre menu mishum recha va'anan dekach linan dekamishtan ba'adas." So he said to Marzutra, on one hand, you're not eating the vegetables, but yet you're sitting here talking to us. And yet Rabbi Yitzchak said that what? That if someone eats four vegetables in the first 4 hours of the day, then what? You shouldn't even converse with them because their bad breath is detrimental for you. To which Marzutra responded, "Amr lehu." Ana kidat Rabbi Yitzchak severely. Dan Rabbi Yitzchak, asr li adam shiyachol yerek chay kodem arba shos. I hold like the other version of Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak holds that you're not allowed to eat. So there are two versions of Rabbi Yitzchak. One version of Rabbi Yitzchak was, you can't talk with someone who has eaten vegetables in the first 4 hours of the day because their bad breath is detrimental to you. The other version of Rabbi Yitzchak is, you should not eat raw vegetables for the first 4 hours of the day. Rabbi Yitzchak says, I don't hold like the first version, I hold like the second version. So I won't eat raw vegetables the first 4 hours of the day, but I have no problem talking with you guys who did. Kol katan maktin. We'll say, if you eat any underdeveloped item, ultimately what? It stunts your growth. On Rav Chista, afilu gadja barzuza. Even if you eat a very fatty kid, right? So even if you have a young goat, right? A young goat that has not fully matured, right? Which I will say was very expensive, was a delicacy, but because it has not yet fully grown, eating it apparently stunts your growth. So we'll say this is only true if it has not grown to one quarter of its full growth. But once something has grown to its quarter of its full growth, then halacha lamaisa, there's no problem. Kol nefesh meshiv nefesh, eating anything whole, right, in its fully intact form, restores life. Amar Papa, I feel gildani debegili. Even if you eat the small fish that swim amongst the reeds in the marsh. The idea being also they would eat, like, it's like sardines, right? They would eat small fish. So the idea of eating anything whole, Chazal felt restored vitality. Kalakaro v'nefesh meshiv esanefesh, anything close to the source of life restores life. So this is very interesting. Amrav Acha Bar Yaakov Unka. This refers to eating the meat of the throat. So the throat of the animal, of course, is where it was shechted. So that's where life was taken. That's where life, right? That's where life is. So apparently, again, they felt there was certain benefit to eating the meat of the throat. Amrali Rav Lashamei Ki Maisis Li Umtza De Bisra Tarach Va'aisli Nehecha De Mekarev Lebei Baruch. When you, so Rava used to say to his servant, when you go out to the marketplace and you purchase from me meat, try to purchase from me meat from the place where they made baruch. We'll say, what does that mean? The place where they made the place where they make a bracha on shechita. So bring me meat from the place where they made the bracha on the shechita. Try to bring me meat from the throat. Kruv lamazon, utradin l'refuah. Cabbage is good. Cabbage is good ultimately, again, for satiating purposes. And beets are good for medicinal purposes. Kruv lamazon in l'refuah, so is that saying that cabbage is only good for food, but not good for refuah? V'atayga, shishad ramarap in esachol mechayo. There are six things which could help aid in medicinal healing, and they lead to sustained health. And what are they? The Elohim, Kruv, Vitradin, Umesisin, Dvash, Vekeva, Veheres, Vioseres Hakavet. So I say, what are they? Kruv, cabbage, Tradin are beets, Mesisin, Rashi says, was this type of cooked item. Divash, honey. Keva is the stomach, or the stomach of the animal. Heres is the womb of the animal. Vioseres HaKavet is the diaphragm of the animal. These were considered to be parts of the animal that had medicinal healing as well. So you see that cabbage is not just good for muzzin, but also it's good for ela'ima, kruv aflamuzzin. Rather, it means cabbage is not only good to satiate you, but what? It also has healing properties. So we'll say, woe to the home, right? Woe to the body that ingests turnips. Apparently, turnips, major no-no. So the Gemara says, is that true? Ini v'ha amrli Rava l'shamei. But yet, Rava used to say to his servant, ki chazis lifta b'shuga. If you ever see turnips in the marketplace, lo seima liba makarach lifta. So you don't even have to ask what I'm going to eat that day. Or as apparently, so turnips are so. So Rava used to say to his, so he said to his servant, if you see turnips, that's for dinner, right? That's for dinner. So you see, turnips are good. Abaye says, no. Turnips are good, but they need to be cooked with something else. So if turnips are cooked with meat, then they're good. If they're cooked without meat, that apparently is when they are detrimental. Rava Amar Rava says, mibli yayin. Turnips are detrimental if they're cooked without wine. So apparently, again, I guess turnips by themselves seem to have some type of detrimental flavor. When that flavor is blunted by cooking it with something else, like meat or like wine, you're good to go. Itmar, Rav Amar Mibli Basar, Ushmul Amar Mibli Eitzim. Rav said, turnips are detrimental if they're cooked without wine. Shmuel said they're detrimental. Both say, Mibli Eitzim means turnips have to be very, very, very well cooked. The idea is keep eating, keep adding wood to the fire. Keep cooking them more and more and more. And when you keep cooking them, that's when any detrimental flavor evaporates. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mibli Yayin. Rabbi Yochanan says that ultimately, again, they're only detrimental if you cook them without wine. So this is very interesting. Amarli Rava L'Rav Papa. So Rava said to Rav Papa, Sudni. So I'll say, so apparently, Rav Papa had a profession. Rashi says, Sudni, Bal Shechar Tamarim, Rav Papa Mocher Shechar Haya, Kidar Be'ezu Nesha. So we'll listen to this. Rav Papa was a proprietor of date beer. He was a distributor. He was a date beer distributor. We'll say, you know, these statements are always incredible. Why? Because a lot of times we think that because we have professions, that's what stands in the way of becoming a Talmud Chacham. We'll say it's not true. The only thing that stands in the way of us becoming Talmud Chachamim is us. Right? Your profession is not an excuse. Right? Whatever I do for a living, I still have the capacity. Rav Papa sold date beer. That's what he was. He was a date beer distributor. So I said, listen to this. So I said to Rav Papa, Sudni, date beer guy. Date beer guy. Sa'anen tabin leba bisra v'chamra. So apparently, what they used to really use to go ahead and cook turnips with was wine. So said to Rav Papa, you don't have a lot of wine, right? You don't have a lot of wine. So what do you guys use to cook turnips? Amarle, betzibi. We cook it with wood, which also means that in our locale, what we do is we go ahead and we just cook the turnips more and more and more, and that depletes any type of negative flavor. Kia divisu Rav Papa. Like the wife of Rav Papa, after she would go ahead and finish cooking the turnips, she would add another 80 logs to the fire. In other words, that she would continue to cook and cook the turnips until it was fully cooked. In other words, even overcooked. So again, that's the turnips. So now we understand. Turnips are bad when cooked alone, but either introduce wine, introduce meat, or essentially overcook them. Overcook them, and you'll be fine. Turn around, banan. Dak katan maliach. I will say salted fish. So sometimes salted fish apparently had negative effects also. Pamim shumemis. Sometimes, literally, again, it could be beneficial, and sometimes it could kill you. Okay, good. So the Gemara says, when could it kill you? Right? Not, by the way, not worth the risk. Not the herring is good, but not that good. So the Gemara says, right, when could it kill you? B'shiva, b'shiva asar u'be'eshen b'shiva. Either on the seventh day, or after it's salted, either on the seventh day, the seventeenth day, or the 27th day. So we'll say, by the way, just also understanding, it's actually interesting, because also when it comes to fish, we know, again, fish are also impacted by mercury levels. So we'll say, so this is also fascinating. So again, a lot of these things that the Gemara is talking about, I want to point out, we'll say, these are things that they observed, right? When Chazal say things like this, these are not drushas on psukim, these are societal realities that they observed. So sometimes the salted fish had terrible detrimental impact, and what they noted was the detrimental impact of fish for some reason comes at the 7, 17, and 27th day intervals after the fish has been salted. And some say the 23rd day. Velo amran ella bematui velo matui. And we'll say that was only true when the fish was only partially roasted. So apparently the way they used to salt fish was they would roast the fish and salt it. They saw that the negative detrimental health effects only occurred with lightly roasted fish. If the fish was fully roasted, there were no negative detrimental effects. Ava matui, shapir, less than ba. But if it was fully roasted, there was no problem. Udalo matui, shapir lo amran, ela delo shasa basre shechra. And furthermore, again, even if you didn't fully roast the fish, the only time there were the negative health effects was when ultimately you didn't drink beer afterwards. Ava shasa basre shechra less than ba. But I will say, but if you drank beer after the partially roasted fish, even on day 7, 17, 27, 23, you were okay. But we'll say it's just finished. If one drinks water, ultimately, again, because he was thirsty, ultimately, again, he makes a shahakal. And the fact that the Mishnah says, if you drink water when you're thirsty, make a shahakal, indicates to us what? That if you drank water under other circumstances, halacha l'maaseh, you wouldn't make a shahakal. What would be an example of a case where you would drink water and you wanted to make a shahakal? Lafuke mai. I'm Rav Yehuda bar Avin, lafuke leman, top of men. Hey, dechan kase umtsa. You're choking on a bone. Now, we'll say, so this is not what you think. Like, a person's mom is choking on a bone, and I'm ready to give them a cup of water. Nu ashahakal? So again, it doesn't mean that. You know, sometimes they're both saying, you could have something lodged in your throat, and chas shalom, it's not sakana. It's not sakana, right? There's something stuck in my throat. I'm fine. I'm okay. But I have to get it out. So what would you do in those type of circumstances? You would drink water. You would drink water. So we'll say, in a case like that, where the only reason I'm drinking the water is to go ahead and remove the blockage in my throat, the Gemara says you would not make a shahakal for that. So we'll say, remember, again, we spoke about this before, same way that if you're taking medicine, you're taking medication, and the only reason you're drinking the water is to wash down the medication, halacha lemaisa, you don't have to make a shahakal on that water. That's the equivalent of having something lodged in you. So I'm drinking the water for medicinal purposes. If I'm thirsty, of course, I'll make a shahakal. I'm just drinking, I'll make a shahakal. But if there's some type of medicinal benefit, or the only reason I'm drinking the water is for medicinal benefit, you don't have to make a shahakal. We'll say, we'll finish. We'll say, remember again, by water, we had a little bit of a machlokes. Right? How did the Mishnah was changed? Rabbi Tarfon says, I'm sorry, the Mishnah said that if you drink water, you make shakol mi'epidvaro. Rabbi Tarfon said, you say, borei nefashas rabos. So people say, it sounds like they're arguing on the bracha you make before water. right? That the Tanakhama is saying a mikshak, Rabbi Tarfon is saying we say bring the fashos. So the Gemara says, Amrli Rava bar Rav Chanan Labai. So Rava bar Chanan said to Abaye, Amrli Rav Yosef Hilcha Samai. So you know what's the halacha? What do you do with water? Suppose this is incredible. Amrli said to him, Puk Chazi my Ama Dabar. Go out and see what the people do. In other words, you have to ask what the halacha is. You're to see based on the people what they do. Also, you know what do the people do? Oops, sorry. The people make a shahakal. Right? So the people make a shahakal ultimately again before ultimately drinking water and I'll bring the fashas rabos after drinking water. Hadrin aloch ketzad mevarchin osay mazutav. And we ask Hashem tomorrow to begin the sell karakabrachas.